Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Senate Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments for Monday, December 12th. I'm very glad to see such a great group of Oregonians ready to be heard from who have been appointed to boards and commissions and as agency heads. We're looking forward to hearing from all of you. But before we do, we also have our Secretary of State who will be appearing first for the first half hour. So we're going to have to go pretty fast, and I'm going to give her our full attention. And then I'll introduce executive appointments when we get to that point. I want to welcome Representative Dan Rayfield from the House Rules Committee. They've been invited to join us to hear Madam Secretary's testimony. And I think we've got Senator Talbert, who's here as a guest, and welcome to him. And then all the members of our committee, Senator Jenny Burdick, Senator Brian Boquist, myself, the chair, Diane Rosenbaum, as our vice chair, Senator Ted Ferrioli, and our other member, Senator Lee Byer. So without further ado, Madam Secretary of State, you have our full attention.
Thank you. Thank you. For the record, I'm Jean Atkins, Oregon Secretary of State, for about another 22 days. I'm here to report that we had a successful and cleanly executed election in Oregon this November. I want to offer, and I hope you will offer, congratulations to the county clerks, the elections division staff, and all of those who are responsible for carrying out our election activities. A record number of ballots were distributed as our voter registration rolls exceeded 2.5 million for the first time, and over 2 million ballots were cast and counted. There's no question in my mind but that Oregonians can be confident of the results which were certified on last Friday. It was certainly notable in this election cycle, more than any other, county officials and state officials were challenged to be transparent about the process of receiving and tallying ballots. I visited every county clerk during the 22 months that I was in office at some point, and I'm very glad I did, not only for the relationship building and what I learned and the fact that it's a beautiful state and to see all 36 counties is wonderful, but also because it gave me the information I needed to respond with confidence to the flood of questions and concerns about the elections process and how it works that came our way in the final weeks of the campaign. It was also notable that this was the first presidential election, I think, where social media could, with lightning speed, spread information, some accurate and some not, that voters would respond to. And I'm not talking about the candidates themselves. I'm talking about process issues. A news story from a TV station in San Diego indicating mail-in ballots for that county required more than first-class postage to return because it was such a long ballot started a flood of Facebook postings here in Oregon warning Oregonians that their ballots might not be delivered if they only had a first-class stamp on it. A weekend was spent making sure that every county's ballot was small enough that only a first-class stamp would be required. A photoshopped Oregon ballot with only one presidential candidate's name on it started a flood of protests but turned out to be a fake. Another weekend spent proofing the hundreds of ballots. You may realize that there's more than one ballot created in each county because of all the different elections that are held there, making sure that there was no such two candidates with the same name and missing one of the presidential names. So that was a lot of energy was put into getting out in front of the kinds of things that in the past I think have not been necessarily seen by most voters. Over the last 2 years, I've been reporting back to you about Oregon Motor Voter and its implementation, including I sent an update prior to the November election on some emerging issues. Today, we released our summary year-to-date data for 2016. That's through the month of November. 272,702 Oregonians have been registered to date, and nearly 230,000 of them were registered and eligible to vote in the November election. And yes, many of them did vote. 97,000 of those registered through OMV cast ballots in the November election. The chart that's up on the wall here demonstrates what we hoped for. We expanded the percentage of qualified Oregonians who were registered and achieved expanded participation by Oregonians overall in the election. I want to make the point clear, while our percentage of registered voters who turn out by casting a ballot has remained pretty high in recent years, there had been a downward trend on two data points. The percentage of qualified Oregonians who were registered to vote was on a downward trend, and as a result, the percentage of qualified Oregonians overall who participated through casting ballots was going down. What Oregon Motor Voter has done is help to turn around those two trends, and those are the two columns that are highlighted there. While it may be true that OMV registrations produce fewer ballots than the nearly 100,000 ballots they produced in November represent more participation by those who meet voter qualifications in our state, which is the goal we should all be focused on. In addition to reporting these positive outcomes, we've also been tracking our processes and identifying where challenges arose and improvements could be made. In particular, we've been focused on evaluating results in areas that really were of concern to the legislature during their debate. First of all, would the Department of Motor Vehicle System be up to the challenge? Yes, they have been a great partner. They're here today, and I want you all to give them a smile because they have done very well. There's been more than 600,000 records prepared for us over the last 11 months. A system of Secretary of State access to the daily report that they prepare for us has worked smoothly, only occasionally with a minor hitch, and all of those resolved in a short period of time. Would the data be accurate? You've got three partners here creating a voter registration database: the Department of Motor Vehicle Records, the centralized voter registration process that's managed by our Elections Division, and counties, who are the final registrars of voters. We've established communication processes that make it possible to detect and resolve any data variations between the three partners and to work to assure the closest match at all times. Of particular concern is minimizing any potential data error in qualifications to vote, age, address, and citizenship status. At this point, we have identified a very small number of coding errors, almost all of which were identified before the registration was complete. Please keep in mind that in addition to a system of penalties for providing false information to the Department of Motor Vehicles, and in the case of online or paper registration, penalties for providing false information to the Secretary of State, the ballots that every individual submits now includes a signed attestation to the specific qualifications to vote, for which there is a felony level penalty. The Elections Division and county officials are still working through, or finishing last week, working through ballots that came in with non-matching signatures and other indicators of a possible election violation. But we have so far only referred a total of two cases of alleged fraudulent registration to the Department of Justice during this election cycle, and only one related to OMV registration. A total of 20 cases of data entry error that were caught before the registration process was complete have also been recorded, and registration never took place. Given the number of records involved, the error rate looks to be less than 0.05 of a percentage point for the year. But we're still completing all of that analysis. I'll provide as much detail as possible on all of that, and not only on OMV, but other registration methods to you and to the Secretary-elect before my term ends on January 1st. So would this whole process burden the counties, or would it work for the counties? Yes, at the start, the program created some work. The funding you provided them, the legislature provided them, for the relative cost of increased registration was well earned and well used. I hope the funding will continue for at least the end of the eight-year period that we have that people use for their voter registration. For their driver's license registration. And I will let the counties and representatives speak for themselves, and I hope you'll talk with them about it as well. But the feedback we've gotten is that in the end, the greater automation in this system has been largely seen as a benefit. There's less data entry for them, fewer cards that they have to process individually, cleaner voter lists because of the daily address updates that come through, which means far fewer returned ballots and the costs associated with returned ballots. The system, I think, is seen as efficient and effective. We achieved 265,000 address updates for voters through the OMV process that before OMV would have resulted in ballots being returned and voters being deemed inactive. This program is going to go a long way in resolving the inactive voter dilemma, which has been a concern for a lot of legislators. The fourth question that legislators had before we started is, would Oregonians actually tolerate an opt-out system, an automatic system that they had to opt out of? I think the answer is overwhelmingly yes. There are those that do opt out. So far, an average of 8% of those where the automatic process was started have opted out. And there are individuals who write little notes on those cards and who there are people who call and complain about the system. But never was there the level of resistance we thought we might need to be prepared for. We hired and sent home temps that were available to answer calls and when we first started the program and again when we did the reach back to the 2014 and 2015 database. As it turned out, the greatest number of complaints that we received, the biggest problem Oregonians have with our system is that although it's automatic, it isn't instant. This is the matter that I put before you in a letter before the election. As you know, statute requires us to hold the eligible voter's record for 21 days after notification before we can complete the registration. Recognizing that, and because voter registration deadlines are not always in everyone's mind, we made a specific effort in our outreach to encourage people to take action to speed up their registration if they came to the DMV within the 3 weeks before the registration deadline. In the primary, we didn't hear any concerns from Oregonians about missing the registration deadline, so we thought our education efforts were very successful. But we certainly did hear from many Oregonians who were upset about missing the voter registration deadline during the general election cycle. Some of you legislators heard from them as well. I'll leave it to the next secretary to determine what improvements can be made in our outreach materials and our processes. I know that Department of Motor Vehicles, Elections Division, and the clerks have all begun discussing that. But I think no matter how much opportunity we give people to beat the registration deadline, it's simply going to happen in the future that they do miss it. As long as there's a registration deadline and a 21-day waiting period to confirm registration. So that's a policy question you all may want to take up at some point. In closing, I would say the goal established by our Elections Division is to work to register everyone who is qualified while working to assure that no one who is unqualified casts a ballot. It's not an easy task for any agency. Anything that requires you to do everyone and no one is a daunting standard. But I will put up our system in Oregon against any states in achieving what's possible in that regard. Of course, as the first state in the nation to implement this system, there are lessons learned. I've shared some of them, but I hope you'll join me in taking pride in Oregon's pioneering spirit toward expanding access to democracy. And I'm happy to take any questions. I know you have a lot of impatient people behind me, so
thank you. Thank you, Madam Secretary, for all of your work implementing this system, which I think has become quite the model for the country. It seems like every day I see three more national news stories about Oregon leading the way. I also want to mention that we have been joined by Representative Vic Gilliam, a member of the House Rules Committee, and welcome to him as well. We are very glad to have you here. So at this point, I'll open it up for questions. Senator Farioli.
First a statement, then a question, Madam Chair. Two questions. Madam Secretary, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
You know, being asked to step in a very tumultuous time and with such big changes in our registration policies and practices is a tall order, and you filled it very well.
So thank you, Senator. Just, I appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you. Question, Madam Chair. The first is... has to do with an instruction in the voter's manual on the vote-by-mail process that has to do with interpreting write-ins. So there was a memorandum on November 7th that discussed how write-ins would be interpreted, but it didn't seem that that those instructions necessarily comported with what people thought was in the voter's pamphlet, particularly in the scenario examples that were used. So what was it that was so important that we had to do an interpretation on how write-in votes were to be interpreted that was issued just the day before those ballots were being counted?
Well, I'm going to have to drag this out of my memory, and I could ask for election staff to come up, but it probably would be better if I try to respond in writing to your question. Yes, there was a challenge or a concern about the most appropriate way. I don't think that our memorandum and the voter's pamphlet were inconsistent, but there was a telephone call with all of the clerks and some discussion of what the most appropriate process was, and it's not coming flooding back to me at the moment. So I'll be happy to provide the committee with
Madam Chair, I think I can clarify.
Follow up?
Okay.
From the copious notes that I received with the question, it really had to do with if people elected or marked a ballot and also filled in a ballot in the write-in area, those votes apparently were counted as overvotes. So I think the question was, for instance, if a ballot was in the voting area was marked for Hillary Clinton, Tim Kaine, and there was also marked in the writing area, in the write-in area, and the write-in showed Clinton, then that was considered to be an overvote because there'd be the designated ticket and plus the Clinton write-in.
Right.
And so apparently those are counted as overvotes, but there are other scenarios in which those same or similar markings were not considered overvotes, and I think it caused some confusion on how write-in votes would be counted, especially if they tended to duplicate those that were offered in the ballot as party votes.
Right. I don't know, Madam Chair. Senator Ferrioli, we do have election staff here. I have a feeling this is going to be a little bit of a long discussion, so I don't know if you want to do it here or if you would like the election.
Madam Chair,
and I'm just going to jump in just briefly because the time we had allotted for this was really until for about another 10 minutes. And I think
Madam Chair, I'm happy to submit the question right
and
take it offline.
That would be great because if there are fact-specific questions like that, I'm sure that the Madam Secretary and the staff would be happy to address them. I would think that was an overvote, actually, but that's just me off the top of my head.
Yeah.
If somebody had both marked a choice of a printed candidate and written something in, that would be an overvote.
Madam Chair, I've always wanted my votes to count twice.
I'll note that for the record, Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My second question.
Get a committee vote and a floor vote.
But your question is whether or not it was applied consistently across all races and so forth. So
it also has to do with if it's an overvote, neither vote's counted. That was the point.
Uh-huh.
All right. So
additional question.
Yes, Madam Chair. Yes. I think Madam Secretary, you already discussed the issue, the complexity of the 21-day. Mm-hmm. limitation and the idea that we were mailing cards to voters who had taken advantage of voter registration and they were being told they were registered, but they were also being told they were not registered because they got their card within that 21-day dead zone.
And the people who get the card, Madam Chair and Senator Ferrioli, we did establish for the 21 days before the voter registration deadline an additional brightly colored piece of paper that would go in the mailing identifying that the registration deadline is coming up and telling what it was and suggesting that people take action beforehand. So, yes, we we used the standard letter, which indicates the automatic. We added the additional information, and again in the primary, we thought perhaps that was sufficient because we didn't have the kinds of problems that we had in the general. But whether or not we want to do or have to do a separate, a different letter during that time, so that it's that much clearer, that's what needs to be worked through, because it obviously did frustrate people and have some confusion. When we got to the general election, note the difference between the interest on the primary during the primary and the interest in the general.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the answers and responses, and I'll submit those two questions in writing for the pleasure of the secretary when she can get to them.
I will. And we'll get them.
Thank you very much, Senator Farioli.
Additional questions? Well. Wow, it looks like you might have done a great job of answering everybody's questions.
Everybody's anxious to
And
to
I just,
point.
Again, I thanked you at the outset, but I want to say that I did talk to people in my own neighborhood because I hadn't had a need to go door-to-door for a while since I wasn't running for re-election. I did talk to newly registered people under Motor Voter and found, by and large, that I got very positive responses, particularly from people who had moved and had had their ballot come to their new address, and some people had moved from out of state and were quite excited to have received a ballot and were glad to know that I knew where they could drop the ballot off. I think they were surprised that their state senator was actually at their house. They sort of thought, oh, I just arrived here from California, and apparently the welcome wagon includes having your elected officials tell you where to go vote. But I think, by and large, if you look at these figures, they are staggering. I mean, to have 70.4% of all eligible Oregonians turn out in an election is remarkable, truly remarkable, and to have over 80% of registered voters turning out, I think we have a lot to be proud of. You have a lot to be proud of in your tenure in this office, and just want to thank you and all of your staff for doing a great job.
Thank you very much, and all credit to the counties as well.
Senator Burdick.
Please go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to echo the comments of Senator Farioli about how extraordinary it was that you were able to come in under such challenging circumstances with a big new mandate to implement, and there was no drama, high professionalism, and you just did an amazing job, and I just wanted to commend you for that.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be a witness at Senator Rosenbaum's last hearing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, so that will conclude our informational hearing, and next we will be moving into executive appointments. So for the benefit of all the great folks that have joined us, having been appointed by the governor to various boards and commissions and as heads of agencies, I'll just tell you how we're going to operate here, and you probably got a preview of this when you were told what to expect, but we will be calling you up individually if you're the only person being considered for a particular position, or as groups if there are several of you for one board, and there are in several cases. We have some people joining us by telephone, but the vast majority of you came here out of your busy lives, so we're looking forward to hearing from you, but what we're going to ask is for you to tell us very briefly about your background and why you want to serve in this particular position, and then I will open it up for questions, if there are any, from our committee members. And then don't worry if you don't hear us voting on your appointment immediately, because at the very end of this hearing, we will be passing motions that will take up all of your respective appointments. So we're looking forward to hearing from you, and I think we are ready to begin. So makes me a little nervous when our committee administrator is out of the room, but I think we're ready to begin. So I'm going to start by opening a public hearing on the appointment of Rick Miller to the Oregon Investment Council. He will be joining us in person, and then after we've heard from him, we'll be calling James Biddle. So, good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee, and you get to kick things off. So please tell us briefly about your background and why you want to serve on the Oregon Investment Council.
Yeah, well, good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. It's great to be here. Before I start, I know several of you, but I got to tell you, it neither qualifies me or disqualifies me, but I'm 7 feet tall. So if that's on your mind, I want to let you know. I'm Rick Miller. I live in Lake Oswego. I'm really honored that the governor has recommended me to serve on the Oregon Investment Council. Just to give you a little background, I'm a seventh generation Oregonian, love this state, grew up in Portland, and I attended the University of Oregon where I earned a bachelor's degree in business, and then I followed that up at the Portland State University where I earned an MBA. Currently serve on the Board of Trustees as the vice chair at Portland State, chair of the Finance Committee. My professional career has been a bit entrepreneurial. We don't have a lot of time, so I won't go into detail, but suffice it to say, I've founded several businesses here in the healthcare, venture capital, and farming sectors. I'm joined by my wife, Erica, today, and together we have six wonderful kids, aged 27 to 8, so it's a busy season. And then the last thing I would say is that I've done quite a bit of due diligence on the council. I understand the role and the responsibilities of the members of the council to maximize returns and minimize or mitigate risk for the state of Oregon and its pension members. I still have a lot to learn, and I'm eager to do so. And if you believe that I'm qualified and fit for the position, I'm ready to start.
Great. Well, thank you for your willingness to serve. This is an extremely important position to the entire state of Oregon, and in a whole lot of ways, including our finances, our body of public employees, and the financial health of the state. So we're pleased that you're willing to serve. And do we have any questions?
Senator, 3 years I've asked the same question.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you. In your closing, you made mention, and if they didn't warn you, I was going to ask you this question. It's their fault, because I've asked every person that's come before this on this
Perfect.
Hill. In your closing, you talked about doing the due diligence and the responsibility. Can you just, what we've been pushing for is exactly what you said, ensuring members who understand what their fiduciary responsibility is in being a board member. Would you address that just a little bit, your understanding of fiduciary responsibility? And since you're a businessman, this should be an easy one for you.
Yeah, I think, to be brief, the duty is to maximize returns and mitigate risk. So that's what I intend to do. I'm sure if you're looking for more than that, but I consider that to be the fiduciary.
No, I don't need a dissertation.
Duty.
Everybody else is back there. I just put everybody on the record because I blocked some of your colleagues before going here until they've admitted that. So, and you admitted it right up front, so that's very good.
Okay, I don't see any other questions for you, so I'll thank you again. I think it was great that you are wearing a tie that is the color of money. And
Irish money, by the way.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I'll close that public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of James Biddle to the State Fish and Wildlife Commission, and after we've heard from him, our next witness will be joining us by phone. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. I know. We did not order people in order of height, I assure you.
I bet you could cast longer than you.
Yeah. Chair Rosenbaum, Senators, it's an honor to be here. Jim Biddle lived in rural Oregon all my life, fished, hunted, and enjoyed the outdoors. Being nominated by Governor Brown to the State Fish and Wildlife Commission is a privilege and an honor that I don't take lightly. To be a part of the decision-making body that helps keep our natural resources in check and balance is very important to me, and that will be a word that I'll seek on many, many decisions on what's the best balance for the question or the policy that is at hand. I would like to see our youth with more involvement in outdoor resources. I'm really worried about that. As we see, I feel we're losing them to cell phones and iPads. We all have one. I wonder we haven't heard one go off yet, you know. It's about our younger generation. It's not that the state isn't trying. The state's trying with the youth. But I'd just like to see more emphasis on long-term programs. make sure they have the same opportunities I had and my children had. And I'm just here to give back to the resource that created so many fond memories for me.
Okay. Thank you very much for stepping forward and your willingness to serve. Do we have any questions? Go ahead, Senator Boquist.
Thank you. I think you're aware that the agency is struggling financially. And I did note that you come from the private sector. And so I guess I'll have a pretty simple question. I mean, I'm assuming your business is not bankrupt and you know how to balance a budget. And your thoughts, because the board, the commission is responsible for helping the agency balance the budget, and your thoughts on participating more robustly, like some of your new colleagues there, in that budgeting process to help get that agency on its feet so it can serve those children?
Chair Rosenbaum and Senator Boquist, that's a very good question, because after working at Willie Boats as long as I have, we are finally starting to get a budget. That's how unorganized we were. And it's such a challenge for small business to stay in business. But the budget for us is so, it's been so intriguing and so enlightening, and to have the energy for it of where every dollar spent, what it's spent on, what it goes towards, and then what's left over for the fringe benefits for my employees. I would pursue that, the same for this department. You know, check everything that's being spent, why it's being spent, and how it's being spent. Being in the private sector, you've got to pay attention to what you're doing.
Thank you.
Okay, thank
Madam
you.
Chair?
Yes, Senator Farrioli.
Just a statement to amplify the fiduciary duty question. It's not a question, it's a statement. The responsibility for the board to manage the staff is an interesting question, because the staff is the one that will make recommendations to the board. So the challenge for you as a board member is to know when to accept and when to reject those recommendations, because the staff works for you. You don't work for the staff if you're confirmed. Just want to make that clear, because very often we see boards and commissions who do not understand that they are independent bodies that do not work for the agency. The agency staff is to implement the policy as set by the board and commission. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Farrioli. Any additional comments or questions? I don't see any, so thank you again for being here and for your willingness to serve.
Thank you for your time.
And I, while we're on this public hearing, we do have two folks signed up to testify. We don't normally do this in the middle of a hearing, but I'm going to call them forward now just so that we don't run out of time at the end, and I'm going to ask them both to be quite brief, and I'll call John O'Keefe and Lon Sweeney. If the two of you would like to come forward and just testify briefly, we will look forward to hearing from you. And if you'd just be seated and then say your name and just launch right into what you have to tell us. Whoever wants to go first, introduce yourself, say your name, and then your brief testimony.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Farrioli, committee members. I'm John O'Keefe, President of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to testify. I'm here to oppose the appointment of Jim Biddle. This is not about Jim Biddle. I've met him. He's a fine gentleman. It is about ranchers, farmers, again, being left without representation on a commission that addresses issues that are heavily involved in and heavily impacted by. I'd like to clear up one thing. This conversation has gone on for a while. We've said we want a landowner on the board. I guess what we're really saying is we want a representative from production agriculture at a significant scale on the board. This is significant because some of our best ranchers and farmers operate on leased ground, and of course somebody with 10 acres and a house is a landowner. So I would like to clear that up. Production ag provides a lot for wildlife. It provides the land, it provides the habitat to forage. It suffers significantly from wildlife issues, and they're the ones regulated by agencies in the pursuit of wildlife management. Geographically, there is one commission member for 80% of Oregon. There are six for 20% of Oregon. Realizing that the coast probably has additional issues, I would say we're still much out of balance geographically. To be brief, our members are proud to be here. We're willing to shoulder this burden, but it's only be right that they are included in the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. And please go ahead, say your name. Just start by saying your name and
my
then briefly.
Lon Sweeney. I don't represent any particular group other than my 12 grandkids. That's one reason I like Mr. Biddles, is that he has the youth involvement and getting the kids away from some of these toys and out there with the fishing rod in their hand by the stream is a good idea. Now, I think he would make a fine commissioner. And part of this is it would begin to balance the process on the commission. Even with his appointment, there still needs to be modification to achieve the balance. This brings me to my second reason that I'm here today, and that is to ask you to not forward Laura Anderson's name to the full Senate. The reason I make this request is not out of animus toward Mrs. Anderson. It is about balance on the commission. Mrs. Anderson is a strong representative of the commercial fishermen. She grew up in a commercial family, and her livelihood depends on commercial fishing. I do not begrudge her the loyalty to the commercial fishing industry, and actually see her loyalty as a sign of character. It's just that we currently have another commercial fishing representative on the commission, that being Mr. Buckmaster. I have a letter addressed to Governor Brown, authored by your colleagues, Senator Girard, Monroe, Moniz Anderson, and Representative Kimmer. In that letter, it states Bruce Buckmaster is leading an effort to roll back the reforms in Senate Bill 830. This is not what we envisioned when we passed Senate Bill 830. It was Mrs. Anderson who made the motion to implement the delay of Senate Bill 830 for up to a full year. Again, I do respect her loyalty, but what the commission needs is balance. And rather than forward her name, I agree with Mr. O'Keefe that what we need here is a rancher or a landowner with agricultural interest to be put forward for that nomination. If no other options are available, I would ask that you at least table that nomination to make sure that that's what the governor really wants. Thank you for your time, and thank you for your service.
Thank you both for your testimony, and as I said at the outset, we'll be acting on all of these at the close of the hearing today. Thank you for being here. And I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of James Yanni to the Outdoor Youth Program Advisory Board. He'll be joining us by phone. Hi, is this James Yanni?
This is James Yanni.
Hi, James Yanni. Sorry for mispronouncing your name. This is Diane Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Rules Committee. I've just opened a hearing on your appointment to the Outdoor Youth Program Advisory Board. Here at the dais with me in the state capitol are my vice chair, Senator Ted Ferrioli, as well as our members, Senator Lee Byers, Senator Brian Boquist, and Senator Ginny Burdick, as well as we have Senator Kevin Talbert. So please just very briefly tell us about your background and why you want to serve on this board.
Okay. Well, my background is I'm a health educator and alcohol and drug counselor, and have been involved in the field since the mid-90s. I used to work with Catherine Freer Wilderness Therapy as a counselor, and previous to that, I was a wilderness ranger in the Sky Lakes Wilderness down in the Wainema-Fremont National Forest. And in the about 2003-2004, we began an application to start Tree of Life Christian Wilderness Expeditions as an outdoor youth program, and I participated in the meetings somewhat over the years, just kind of as an onlooker. I wasn't an official board member or anything, but have participated with Tom Vanderveen and then the current person, who takes care of that. And we've been licensed since 2007. We're a pretty small program, but, you know, enjoy being a part of, you know, being committed to helping, you know, programs look at safety and functioning and just being a part of the group. And, my understanding, a lot of that has been playing a proactive role in the development of outdoor youth programs in the state of Oregon.
Great. Well, we're very pleased that you're willing to take on this responsibility in addition to your busy duties already. So thank you for being willing to serve. Did we have any questions for Mr. Yaney? Okay, Mr. Yaney, I don't see any questions for you, so we will be acting on your appointment at the close of today's hearing. Thank you very much for joining us by phone, and we'll let you go. Have a good day.
Okay, thank you very much.
And I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Maureen Bedell to the Oregon State Lottery Commission. And after we've heard from her, we'll have a large group of appointees to the Governor's Child Foster Care Advisory Commission so they can be getting ready to come forward. Hi, is this Maureen? Hello, is this Maureen Bedell?
Yes, it is.
Hi, this is Diane Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Rules Committee. I've just opened a hearing on your appointment to the State Lottery Commission, and here in the state capitol are Vice Chair Senator Ted Ferrioli, as well as Senators Lee Beyer, Senator Brian Boquist, Senator Jenny Burdick, and a guest of our committee, Senator Kevin Talbert. So please go ahead and tell us briefly about your background and why you want to serve on the Lottery Commission.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Rosenbaum and Vice Chair Ferrioli and members of the committee. For the record, as you know, my name is Maureen Bedell. I live in Bend, Oregon in Senate District 27. And as you know, I am the nominee for the Lottery Commission law enforcement position. I had the pleasure of a 25-plus year career with the Oregon State Police, and I spent probably over 14 years in the Criminal Investigation Division, both conducting investigations and then later on supervising criminal investigations. I've also had significant leadership experience within the agency, and in December of 2014, I retired as the Deputy Superintendent. I would say my motivation for seeking this position is just real simple. I would like to continue my public service. I've lived in Oregon for over 40 years, and service to my state and my community has always been very important to me. So if I am lucky enough to be confirmed, I would look forward to the opportunity, and I truly appreciate your time and your consideration today.
Well, thank you very much for taking on this assignment. It is extremely important, obviously, to the financial health of the state as well as the other issues that the Lottery Commission needs to deal with, including gambling addiction and numerous others. So it is an important assignment. Do we have any questions for Ms. Bedell? Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so we will be acting on your appointment at the close of the hearing. Thank you again for joining us, and have a great day.
Thank you.
And I will close that public hearing and next open a public hearing on the following appointments to the Governor's Child Foster Care Advisory Commission. Before I say these names, we have 9 people here in the room, so I think we'll take them in groups of 3. Then we also have 2 people joining us by phone, and I think we'll do those last. So should I say everybody or just call them 3 at a time?
Just open up everybody, okay. And then we'll go back.
Okay, so I'm opening a public hearing on the following appointments to the Governor's Child Foster Care Advisory Commission: Timothy Colahan, Gina Valerie Colas, Carolyn Cruz, who will be joining us by phone at the end, Robin Donart, Christine Hartman, Luvia Morello, Emily Ryman, Carrie Ryack, Caitlin Robertson, Nicole Stapp, and William Wagner. So first, if we could have Timothy Colahan, Gina Valerie Colas, and Robin Donart come forward. And welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. I think you now know what we're wanting to hear from you, and this is a newly created commission, so we'll just be excited to hear from you about why you want to serve on it.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, Senators, my name's Tim Colahan. I'm from Burns, Harney County, Oregon. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today as a nominee for the Governor's Child Foster Care Advisory Commission. I retired on September 1 of this year as District Attorney of Harney County. I served 29 years and 11 months. I still don't know why I didn't serve one more month, but making it even 30. But presently, I serve as the Executive Director of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. In my years as an elected DA and also previously as a deputy DA in Multnomah County, I handled hundreds of child dependency cases from shelter hearings all the way through permanency hearings. Many of these cases involved children that were being removed from the home because of abuse and neglect and being placed either with other family members or in foster care. In many of those cases, the children had been so severely abused and neglected that they had to be placed in therapeutic foster homes so those children could receive specialized treatment and therapy. So I'm certainly aware of the desperate need that Oregon and the children of our state have for safe and caring foster homes. I also know the tremendous challenges that the Oregon Department of Human Services has in licensing, monitoring, and watching over these group homes. I think that I have the type of background that brings a perspective to this commission. I look forward to this opportunity. I appreciate the opportunity given to me by Governor Brown. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And please go ahead.
Yes. Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. My name is Gina Valerie Cola, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on the Oregon Oregon Governor's Child Foster Care Advisory Commission. I have a long passion for juvenile dependency law, and that has been my driving force to go to law school. And I'm currently an appellate attorney in the juvenile appellate section of the Office of Public Defense Services. And for the past 5 years, I've represented parents and their appeals and juvenile dependency cases and termination of parental rights cases. But prior to applying for this position, I was also in the governor's child foster care task force for legal representation and dependency. I believe that my background and work gives me the experience to be able to see how juvenile dependency, the dependency code, and also foster care policies and rules kind of go together, and how to make sure that they work in conjunction to ensure the safety of children, but also to the overarching goal, which is reunification with parents and families. And I appreciate this opportunity to be on this commission, and thank you.
Thank you for your willingness to serve, and please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senators, my name is Robin Donart. I live in Beaverton. I appreciate this opportunity as well. I am the executive director of Maple Star Oregon, which is a nonprofit agency that provides therapeutic foster care, as well as intensive in-home services for families that are at risk. I've been doing that for the last 14 years since I've been in Oregon. And prior to that, I have experience in direct services, both in mental health as well as the child abuse investigations in another state. I served on the governor's external advisory committee into child safety and substitute care, and I think that experience, as well as some of the committees that I participate in, along with some of our Department of Human Services personnel on investigations, has spurred me to my interest here to continue to try and work on the issues that we're seeing in the system in order to provide better services to the children and the youth that we see in foster care. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, all three. And do we have any questions for this panel? Yes, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate all three of you volunteering. And well done, I guess, in Harney County. You're still here. This issue is in the news almost every other day. And so you're starting at a bit of a deficit. And of course, unlike most, you know, boards and commissions, we generally get about three lines of go forth, do good things. You have about a year's worth of work to get done in about two quarters here in order to get this system up and working. And, you know, my district, unfortunately, has had several of the 6 o'clock news stories that have turned out to be very bad. And so I just first thank you, but then, you know, you've got a lot of work to do very, very fast. So you're not retired anymore. because this is a system that needs to be fixed. It needs to be fixed very, very quickly. So good luck. And if you want to pull out now.
Thank you, Senator Boquist. And I think the lack of questions certainly does not reflect that the seriousness with which the entire legislature takes this responsibility, because obviously we have all spent a lot of time delving into the situation with kids in foster care, and it needs a great deal of work. A lot has been done already, and a lot still remains to be done, and you will be a huge part of that, and my comments apply to everybody we're about to hear from, too. So thank you again. And next, I'll call, Christine Hartman, Luvia Morello, and Carrie Reich, or I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing your name. And then after we've heard from them, Caitlin Robertson and Nicole Stapp. Whoever wants to go first, just jump right in.
I'll go. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. I'm here as a nominee for the Governor's Child Foster Care Advisory Commission. My name is Yuvia Magali Morello. I'm currently a foster parent of 2 toddlers in the foster care system. I have worked at NAYA, the Native American Youth and Family Center, for over 3 years now, working with foster youth. I currently work in a program that I appreciate very much because we work with Native foster youth 0 to 24, so I've also walked with youth exiting the foster care system and have heard their stories and seen their lives move on past the system. Comments that I heard just now about how much work we have to do, I see that every day with the youth I work with the youth I come home to every night. I work with their families because I became a foster parent, because family reunification is first for me. So I want to see these children returned to home. If they are not able to, then I'm happy to be that home for them. I have so much to say about foster youth in Oregon and the work that needs to be done, but just know that I know it. I see it every day, and I speak to the youth every day.
Thank you very much.
Chair Rosenbaum and the rest of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm honored. My name is Carrie Reek, and I'm the executive director for the Oregon CASA Network. I'm also the executive director for CASA Voices for Children that's located in Benton County. Oregon CASA Network is a membership organization that serves that oversights the 23 CASA programs throughout the state. I have been personally involved with CASA for 13-plus years, from being an advocate to program supervisor and then as the executive director. I'm very passionate about the kids, the children that we serve. I work with them day in and day out. I've watched the changes in the system over the last 13 years. I've seen the impact to the children, and I've seen the positive things that can – positive outcomes as well as the – unfortunately – the not so good outcomes. The children are coming in with higher and higher levels of trauma, which has been talked about. I'm very excited to have the opportunity to be considered and to serve with this group of people that I've heard speak already today. It's very exciting that we have the opportunity to come together and really focus on the children and who are our future, and we can make such a difference for Oregon, both for them individually, but as a community and as a state to ensure that they get what they deserve now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. My name is Christine Hartman. I am married, and I have 8 children. We have two biological children, two adopted children through the child welfare system, and then also four foster youth. And our children that we take are a little bit more challenging. And what really led me to become involved for change is we had worked really hard to get a youth out of a group home, and we were denied over and over again because he was sentenced to spend the rest of his life in a group home. And that was not acceptable in any way. So after 29 hours of court trial testimony, the judge ordered his step down. And he's been with us for 7 months and doing fantastic. This was the first huge example to me, and there's so many tragedies that happened to him over his lifetime. We are his 17th placement. The Children of Oregon deserve so much better, and that is what led me to become involved with the Oregon Foster Parent Association. Currently, I'm the board president. Previously, I was the board secretary. We also run a Facebook page that has almost 600 foster families across the entire state of Oregon that is there as a resource and is very active. I was also serving on the governor's previous committee, the Child Advisory Committee. I am looking forward to this opportunity because foster parents are leaving at a huge rate, and we have got to do better. As a foster parent for over 10 years, I see a lot of the changes firsthand. And our home is full. We are over full at 8. And the state, the children in this state deserve so much better, and that's why I'm here and hopeful for this opportunity to make a big difference within the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if we have any questions, well, thank you again for bringing this wealth of experience and skill to this important commission.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And next I'll call Caitlin Robertson and Nicole Stapp, and then we'll take our three people who are on the telephone. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee. And whoever wants to go first, go ahead.
You can. Is this the right spot?
You're perfect.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Senators. My name is Nicole Stapp, and I'm honored to be considered for appointment to the Governor's Child Foster Care Advisory Commission. So I actually entered Oregon's foster care system when I was 7, and I spent 11 years living in multiple different foster homes. At 18, I moved out into my own apartment, but I stayed a ward of the court until age 21. I think you all received some materials that kind of details some of the advocacy work that I've done. But it first started when I was 15, when I joined the Oregon Foster Youth Connection. Most people only hear it by OFYC. And so if you don't know what that is, it's a youth-led group of current and former foster youth who work to improve the foster care system through advocacy, activism, and leadership. Let's see. And so some of the things that they've done that you might be familiar with is they created the tuition waiver for former foster youth, as well as the Oregon's Foster Youth Bill of Rights. And so in addition to the advocacy work that I've done through them, I've served on the Oregon Child Welfare Advisory Committee, as well as the Governor's External Advisory Committee that just ended in September. On top of that, I've spent some of my professional time through work opportunities working in child welfare. So that included serving as a program coordinator for OFYC for 2 years. And I've also been the training and recruitment coordinator for a local CASA program. I believe that, unfortunately, it is due to tragedy, all those newspaper headlines we've been talking about. But at least now the community is ready to look at foster care, and a light's really being shown. And I think as a community, we're ready to dig in and make some lasting changes. And I think that the children that have lived and the adults now that have lived through foster care really have unique perspectives and insights that they can offer. And you can really only offer that if you've lived through it. I'd really love the opportunity to use both my lived experience and professional abilities to improve the system for both current and former foster youth, and I'm hoping that's something that can happen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. My name is Caitlin Robertson, and I'm from Lebanon, Oregon, and I am also a former foster youth. After spending 21 years in the foster care system, which included around 60 different foster placements, my experience was not the greatest. I believe that just because youth are in the foster system, they shouldn't feel like they don't belong or have any purpose in life. Foster youth should always be encouraged and supported instead of being brought down and ignored. I want to be able to help make system changes for the better for present and future youth in Oregon. And I think my lived-in experience and also my advocacy work would be good.
Well, thank you both. I want to especially thank you because I do well remember, and I think the other members here, the foster youth who have come through the system and have come to visit us and talked about legislation that was needed and so much more is needed. And so you're really bringing an extremely important perspective. I know that I was unbelievably impressed that in addition to just getting an education and figuring out what to do with the rest of your lives, which you've obviously figured out a really great path, that you took the time to come and tell your stories. And I think that's invaluable. So thank you again. Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so we'll let you go. And that completes our in-person witnesses, so now we're going to take three more people by the phone, and we're going to start with Emily Ryman. Hi, is this Emily Ryman?
Yes, it is. Hello.
Hi, this is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Rules Committee. I don't know if you've been listening on the Internet, but we've just heard from a wonderful group of people that the governor has appointed to the Foster Care Advisory Committee. So the hearing is open on your appointment. We'd like to hear from you just briefly about your background and why you want to serve on this commission.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Rosenbaum, members of the committee. My name is Emily Ryman, and I'm from the Eugene-Springfield area. I live in Senator Edwards' district, and I work in Senator Byers' district. And I'm really honored to be considered for this committee, in large part because I feel like my entire professional life has been intertwined with the foster care system. My very first job, even before college, was working at the Eugene Relief Nursery as a child care provider for families that were accessing services to try to keep their family united, but were at risk of DHS involvement. And then after college, I had a series of jobs, first in AmeriCorps working at an alternative high school that served a lot of foster youth, then with the Citizen Review Board program of the Oregon Judicial Department, where I was coordinating the CRB boards that provide a lot of oversight for cases of youth in care. Next with the Independent Living Program, with Looking Glass Youth Services here in Lane County, case managing and then ultimately supervising for the program that works with youth aging out of care, providing skill building and life skills services for them. And in all of those jobs, I really got to work with the full spectrum of partners that are involved with the DHS system. So not just DHS caseworkers and managers, but also judges and attorneys and CASAs and both foster and biological parents, and really got a great overall perspective of that system, both its struggles and its strengths. And then 6 years ago, I nominally left the youth services and DHS sphere to come to work at NEDCO, which is a economic development and affordable housing nonprofit. But almost as soon as I came to NEDCO and the affordable housing world, I started advocating really strongly for housing resources for youth aging out of care. It was always a huge barrier for youth to find housing when they didn't have parental cosigners, didn't have a rental history, didn't have deposits. So I was able to spearhead NEDCO actually buying and rehabbing a 12-unit apartment complex down here in Eugene. That is the first complex dedicated entirely to youth aging out of care. So I like to think I never really left the DHS sphere or the child welfare sphere. I just get to support it from a different direction now. And I'm very excited to be on this commission because I really feel like these are our most vulnerable youth and families, and I think it shouldn't just be a DHS solution or a government solution. I think it really needs to be a solution that all Oregonians participate in. I'd like to think that I could be a small part of that.
Okay, well, I think you will make a tremendous contribution, and thank you very much. I don't see any questions for you, so we'll be acting on the whole set of appointments at the close of today's hearing. We'll let you go and have a great day.
Great, thank you so much.
And next, we'll be hearing from William Wagner. Hi, is this William Wagner?
This is.
This is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments. And with me here are Senator Brian Boquist. We have several other members who've briefly stepped out of the room. And we also have Senator Kevin Daubert, who's our guest today. So we've opened a hearing on all of the governor's appointments to the Foster Care Advisory Commission. If you could just very briefly tell us why you'd like to serve, that would be great.
Okay, thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. Again, I'm Bill Wagner, and I'm from Bend. My primary concern with our current foster care system is the length of time it takes to provide a permanent home for children in the system. Any child, and especially the vulnerable child in the system, need both the fact and the feel that they have a home that they are securing. However, there is no one picture of what that place called home looks like and how long it takes to achieve. And that makes accomplishing this the work of many, really all who touch the children. My direct involvement with the Oregon foster care system began almost 18 years ago when I began service in the Oregon Judicial Department Citizen Review Board program, first in Denton County and now in Deschutes County. As such, I have monthly looked in depth at 6 to 10 cases of children in foster care. At our review hearings, we make findings and recommendations very similar to those of the court. To arrive at our opinions, we review written case file information and then question directly parents, foster parents, relatives, CASAs, attorneys, and caseworkers as to the progress of the case and the adequacy of services provided to the children and families. I think that work has provided me with a clear understanding of both the strengths and the weaknesses of our current system, and it will make it possible for me to evaluate the concepts this commission should hear to improve our system of foster care. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your willingness to serve, and I don't see any questions for you, so we will let you go and be acting on your appointment at the close of our hearing. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you.
And next we'll be hearing from Carolyn Cruz. Hi, is this Carolyn Cruz?
Yes, it is.
Hi there. This is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Rules Committee. And here in the Capitol with me are Senators Brian Boquist and Senator Kevin Talbert and Senators Jenny Burdick. We have other members who are listening and we'll be back shortly. So please just briefly tell us about your background and why you'd like to serve on this commission.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking my phone call over the line. I have to be in tribal council tomorrow, so I am a member of the Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs. So I am Wasco, Tenino, Pitt River, Nisqually, Hawaiian, from my mom's side, and I am also a Yaqui and a little Spaniard, Mestizo. My father's from Magdalena, Sonora, Mexico. And so my background is varied. I was born and raised in Monterey, Salinas, and San Jose, California, prior to coming to work for my tribe. I also was a deputy sheriff for a couple years in Santa Clara County. I worked for the state with the Addictions and Mental Health Division for about 21 years before I came back home to work for my own tribe, the Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs. And so that's kind of who I am. I was invited by Clyde Psyche to be part of the independent review of the child safety and substitute care as part of the House Bill 4080. So I participated. I don't believe I missed any of the meetings. And so I am very familiar with House Bill 4080. I'm very familiar with the final report. And so I guess all I could say is the fact that I'm very, I guess, compassionate towards children. It hurts me, I guess, when I know kids have to be removed from their household, and it hurts me even more when we put the children in foster care or within homes for their protection, and there's sometimes where the conditions sometimes are worse than what they came from. So I would like to be part of the solution instead of being part of the problem. I am the Health and Human Services General Manager for my tribe, and I do oversee Child Protective Services as one of my departments. And I do know that we're going through some revisions also, and some of the findings, I think, in the final report is very helpful to also guide, you know, our Child Protective Services here, because some of the findings are very similar. So all I could say is the fact that I will do the best of my ability if I am confirmed, and that I'm interested, and I have a good reputation for following through. I'm a very busy person, but I'm always told that if you want people on a committee, get the busiest people.
Right, absolutely. Okay, well, thank you very much. My dad always says, my dad is 94, and he says exactly the same thing. If you want anything done, ask a busy person to do it. So you're my dad would love you. thank you again, and I don't see any questions for you. So we'll be acting on your appointment and that of all of your colleagues who are going to be serving on this very, very important commission. We'll be acting on your appointments at the close of today's hearing. Thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you, Senator Rosenbaum. Thank you.
And that concludes the nominees for the Governor's Child Foster Care Advisory Commission. I also wanted to acknowledge that we're joined in the audience by Representative-elect Tana Sanchez. It's great to see her here, too, and I know she's very interested in this area, so thank you for being here today.
Representative Dwayne.
And Dwayne Stark. I'm sorry I did not see you, Representative Stark. Thank you both. Thank you both for being here. Okay, so we'll close that public hearing and next open a public hearing on the following appointments to the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board. I'll read them all, and then we'll call them in two groups of three. Kevin Cassidy, Therese Skirlitz, John Hartsack, Kent Claywitz, John Mishra, and Cynthia Richardson. So first we'll call Kevin Cassidy, Therese Skirlitz, and John Hartsack. The three of you would like to come forward. And thanks for waiting so patiently. I always think it's a great experience as an Oregonian to be able to hear from so many talented, busy people who are willing to volunteer for these important positions. And we're looking forward to hearing from you.
All right.
Go ahead.
All right. So Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Farioli, and senators on the commission. My name is Kevin Cassidy. I come to you by way of Baker City today. And I would thank you for this opportunity of pending appointment on the Fair Dismissal and Appeals Board. The past 15 years, I've served the state as a public contracting officer for the Department of Transportation, and currently I am honored to serve my local community as the board chair for the Baker 5J School District. And from that service, regionally representative of the school boards there on the Oregon School Board Association's Board of Directors. So from those experiences, I've successfully been able to apply what I feel are two principles that I feel are applicable to the Fair Dismissal and Appeals Board. And first is upholding the integrity of public process. And second is ensuring high ethical standards are applied to those processes. I want to thank you for your time today and the service that you provide our Oregonians as well, and I'll leave it for questions at the end.
Great. Thank you very much. I think we'll hear from all of you before we open it up for questions.
Thank you. Before I begin, I would like to also thank the Senate Rules Committee and associated staff for your time and dedication to the state of Oregon and for inviting me here today. My name is Therese Skirlitz, and I'm from Silverton, Oregon, where I'm also an assistant principal at Silverton High School. This will be my sixth year there as an employee, but I also graduated from there, so I'm lucky to have come back now and be the boss of my math teachers. And prior to that, I worked at Malala High School, both as a teacher and as an administrator. I'm excited and honestly a little bit awed by the opportunity to be considered a nominee for this governor-appointed board position. I believe in strong processes and access to fairness, and above all, I'm committed to service. As a longtime volunteer for the Special Olympics of Oregon, as well as my local food bank, I'm excited for the opportunity to serve our Oregon communities through this process. I look forward to bringing my energy and enthusiasm and work ethic to make positive contributions to the members and as it relates to the expected duties. I'm confident that my experiences, both on a member of the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators Secondary Educators Board, as well as a variety of other committees having to do with career and technical education, as well as having been a coach and a teacher administrator, will serve my colleagues in the process well. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, committee. I've been on the Gresham Borough School Board for 2 years now, but I've been involved with the district for about 12 years. Our chair, who is Representative Peluso, encouraged me to apply that this group really needed some slots filled, as well as some people that were kind of anxious to move on to other service. So I look forward to it. My background is project planning and construction. So I am not a human resources person. I'm not an attorney. But the greatest compliment I was ever given was someone saying I was tough but fair. So I think I can serve well on this committee and look forward to it. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, all three. Did we have any questions for these good folks? Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so thank you again. And next, I will call Kent Klewitz. Klewitz, thank you for correcting me. John Mishra and Cynthia Richardson, if the three of you would like to come forward. I've learned a lot about phonetics from our committee administrator, Aaron Seiler, who's great at putting people's names in phonetic form so that we don't mispronounce them. But she doesn't always do that before we hear you say your name. So. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, Senators Ferrioli, Beyer, Boquist, and Burdick, as well as Talbert. My name is Kent Klewitz. I'm the superintendent of Jefferson School District, and I'm very pleased to be here. I started teaching my teaching career in 1979 in Bandon, Oregon. That was before the golf course. At the finish of this school year, I will be completing my 38th year as an Oregon educator. For the past 11-plus years, I've served as superintendent, 3 years in Myrtle Point on the southern Oregon coast, and the past 11-plus years, past 8 years with Jefferson School District, just south of the Capitol. Before, I also served 7 years as a building principal and 20 years as a classroom teacher at elementary, middle, and high school years. Past 15 years of educational leadership in Oregon have been really amazing. I've been able to be a part of a significant and strategic shift towards student learning and quality teaching. This focus has also shifted the role of the building principal to the educational leader. Developed appropriately and adequately supporting the combination of student learning, quality teaching, and educational leadership promises to have a lasting positive effect on Oregon students and their future. I appreciate, it's been an exciting time to be a leader in education, and I appreciate the opportunity to serve in this capacity, and it's an honor to do so. So I thank you for considering my name.
Great. Thank you very much. Please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Ferrioli, Senators, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. My name is John Mishra. I'm from Hermiston, Oregon, where I currently serve as the Executive Director of Special Programs. This is my 8th year in Hermiston, 26th year in education. Prior to being the Executive Director, one of the roles I served was the Human Resources Director. So being appointed to the Fair Dismissals Appeals Board is kind of a natural progression. I've worked through the system through it as an educator, have been involved with hearings and processes as a Human Resources Director. It's an honor to serve. be able to serve on this board. I just finished reading a book about Mahatma Gandhi, and he talked about service above self. And service above self is easy to say. It's hard to do, especially when it comes to all the stuff that needs to get done. And it takes committed folks and committed people to do that, such as yourselves who are there, and then the populace, us, that need to come in and do what we need to do on our part. So I look forward to serving in this capacity.
Great. Thank you.
Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Ferrioli, Chair Committee, it is my pleasure to be here today. I'm thankful to be nominated for this position. I have been a 38-year educator as well. I've served as a high school teacher, elementary principal, middle school principal, high school principal. For the past 14 years, I've been the principal of two of the most challenging high schools in Salem, Oregon. McKay High School, 7 years, and I'm in my seventh year at North Salem High School. I truly, truly love the work that I get to do, touching the lives of students every day. And one of the most valuable things we can give our students is a quality education, and we have to have the right teachers for them. And so I really appreciate being nominated for this committee and considered that I have the right credentials to serve.
Sir.
Great. Well, thank you. All three sound well qualified, and that you will add a lot to this important position. Any questions for these good folks?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you again. And I will close the public hearing on this appointment and next open a public hearing on the appointment of John Kontzer to the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board. And have a seat. And I'll just mention before you testify that Senator Betsy Johnson did want to attend this portion of our hearing and had some concerns about the appraisal process. And I know that you haven't really had time to read her letter, which is now being distributed to the committee members. But if you did have any comments about the situation, which essentially seems to be a shortage of appraisers, beefed up qualifications, which are mostly a result of federal requirements, we would love to hear them. I assume that all came about partly because of the collapse of the housing market and the crisis that that created in our entire economy. But no pressure, so so please go ahead and tell us who you are and why you'd like to serve.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Senators. My name is John Kontzer. I was born in Roseburg, Oregon. I currently live in Albany. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you, and I'm honored to be considered a nominee for the board appointment on the ACLB's board. I'm a sixth-generation Oregonian and entrepreneur. I'm passionate about life, learning, and the pursuit of excellence. My formal educational background is in engineering and business management. I own and operate Kontzer Appraisals, which is one of the largest appraisal firms in the Mid-Willamette Valley. Our goal is to become the largest firm in the state of Oregon, which actually addresses a lot of the questions that are on this sheet. I operate in the law of abundance, collaboration, and creating win-win relationships. I'm excited about the opportunity to serve my community and to contribute to the ACLB's ongoing success. If I could, I could respond to a couple of these, or if there's a particular one that you guys, I know that we have a time frame.
I think our committee members are just seeing this letter for the first time, even after you saw it. So if you have a couple of comments to make, please go ahead.
Okay. Well,
there will be other opportunities, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I do agree that Oregon's, as well as several other states, are experiencing what a lot of people have termed a shortage in the appraisers, the volume. However, I would argue it's actually an increase in the demand that's creating what the appearance of the shortage is. In other words, the demand, with more people moving to the state of Oregon than any other state in the nation, with 1 million people projected to move to Portland in the next 1 to 3 years, or over the next 3 years, and the cascading effect that that's creating. I personally don't think that the barriers to entry have been a bad thing. I think they've been a very positive thing. It's been needed. It's what's partly played a role with the 2000 economic crash, if you will. And I think it's creating now a firewall to prevent that in the future. That being said, these kinds of requirements take time for the private industry or the private sector to find ways to still be profitable and grow. We've been able to do that. In the last 3 years, that's one of been my main focus. I got into this industry forecasting what I saw to happen in the future, and sure enough, it happened. But again, with the collaboration, working with the ACLB, I've co-led several seminars to Organization of Realtors with other board members, and it seems to me that this is simply a hurdle that needs to have a solution, and that a solution properly applied.
Okay, did we have any other questions for Mr. Conster? Okay, and I think we're all pleased that you are willing to serve on this board, and it is important. Obviously, there's work to be done, and it is a good thing for our economy, in my view, that the housing market's booming. It also creates a lot of challenges in affordable housing, and appraisers certainly have a role to play in ensuring that people are getting their money's worth in a what seems like a crazy market that we're in. So,
if I may, I think what you just said highlights exactly the situation. If we're going to have a problem, let's have a problem being busy, and let's find a way to become more efficient rather than not having enough demand and appraisers are going out of business because there's not enough appraisals to do.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Susan Cox to the Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs. And after we've heard from her, our next person will be on the phone. And thank you very much for waiting so patiently.
That's okay. Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Susan Soongoom Cox, and I'm Vice President of Policy and External Affairs for Holt International in Eugene, Oregon. I want to express how honored I am to be considered as a nominee for the Asian and Pacific Islanders Affairs. I was born in Korea and adopted at the age of 4 and grew up in Brownsville, Oregon, and to a non-Korean family. So I know very well the experience of being a minority person in a state that really has very little diversity. I'm very aware of Asians being considered the model minority. Very often when you talk about race, it's black, white, Hispanic, and we're sort of not even anywhere in the mix. So I'm very appreciative of the governor for thinking that this is an important commission to have. During my years at Holt International, I've had the privilege of being working with the adoptees from a number of Asian countries on issues of race, culture, and identity. And I feel it's so critical in terms of the identity of young people and as they go off into their life. I was appointed by President Clinton to the first White House Commission on Asian and Pacific Islanders, and I have remained devoted and active in the issues of API community since then. I am prepared to make the necessary commitment that this commission would require, and I look forward to the possibility of doing this in the future. Thank you.
Great. Any questions for Ms. Cox? I just would comment that I remember meeting you. I don't know if you remember meeting me, but many, many years ago. And I think at the time, were you working at the Holt Adoption
I have been there
Program?
Since,
and you
yes.
still are. So yes. Obviously, you've had a great career and background.
Thank you.
And
we just celebrated our 60th anniversary.
Excellent.
Placed 40,000 kids, so a lot of time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's impressive. Okay, thank you again. And I will close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Sharon Zenger to the Commission for the Blind, and she'll be joining us by telephone. Hi, is this Sharon Zenger?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Sharon. This is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Rules and Executive Appointments Committee. And here in the Capitol with me are Vice Chair Senator Ted Ferrioli, as well as Senators Lee Beyer, Senator Brian Moquist, Senator Ginny Burdick, and our special guest, Senator Kevin Talbert. So we've just opened a hearing on your appointment to the Commission for the Blind. And if you could just briefly tell us about your background and why you'd like to serve.
Thank you, Senator, or Chairman, and others that are there.
My name is Sharon Zinger, and I am from Pendleton, Oregon. I currently work at Intermountain ESD and service students that are blind and visually impaired as a teacher of the visually impaired and orientation and mobility instructor. I've also worked at the Utah School for the Deaf and Blind, and I received many of my education in the state of Oregon at Portland State, where I have a bachelor's degree. My teaching degree was also earned at PSU, and so was my master's in education. I earned my orientation and mobility from the University of Northern Colorado, and I have spent the last 13-plus years as a teacher of the visually impaired. Not only do I teach students that are blind and visually impaired, but I am also blind and visually impaired, and so I bring a unique perspective professionally and personally to this board, and that I not only do I help students transition through rehabilitation and go from the K-12 system into rehab, but I've also personally done it and dealt with different rehabilitation organizations.
Great. Well, we're very pleased that you're willing to take on this assignment in addition to a busy life that you already have. Any questions for Ms. Zinger? Okay, Sharon, I don't see any questions for you, so we will thank you again for taking on this assignment, and we will be acting on your appointment at the close of today's hearing. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. You too.
And I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Dylan Boxler to the Construction Contractors Board. And after we've heard from him, we'll be calling Alexis Taylor. Good afternoon and welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. My name is Dylan Boxler, and I'm here to speak about my opportunity to serve on the Construction Contractors Board in the vacant general contractor large commercial structures position. I'm very excited about the opportunity to serve on this board. I am a third generation constructor. And minority owner of North Sandian Paving, a construction company located in state and Oregon. I'm especially excited about this opportunity because I'm very excited about the future of the construction industry in Oregon. And I believe that the right regulations can make the industry both more fair and better for all involved, including consumers, large and small contractors, and public agencies. Again, thank you for the opportunity to appear today, and I welcome any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, I don't see any. You've answered them all, and thanks again for your patience. And I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Alexis Taylor as the Director of Agriculture. After we've heard from her, we'll be calling Vernon Pomrose. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Farioli, and other members of the committee. My name is Alexis Taylor, and I have been nominated by Governor Brown to serve as the Director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. It's a distinct honor to be before you today. I have had the great privilege of serving farmers, ranchers, and agribusinesses from across the country for well over a decade in Washington, D.C. Promoting agriculture has always really been a passion of mine, dating back to growing up on my family farm in Iowa, a farm that's been in my family for over 157 years this year. I'm drawn to Oregon by the great diversity in its agriculture, the amazing variety of products that Oregon grows, diversity in how it's grown, and in who grows it. With that diversity comes huge opportunities, but also challenges, whether it's how regulations affect adapting and mitigating to climate change, or expanding local and regional food systems, or promoting the benefits of trade to the agricultural and Oregon economy. Diversity is also something I have placed great emphasis on professionally. I had the privilege to lead the Women in Agriculture Initiative at the U.S. Department of Agriculture in my previous role. I've also had the honor to work with returning service members who want to farm and ranch, and this is something very near and dear to my heart as a veteran myself. Both really get to, I think, a core question that agriculture is going to have to answer, and that is who will be our next generation of farmers and ranchers. And I'm very excited to pursue both the Women in Ag Initiative and also veterans who want to serve, come home and farm with the Oregon ag community. I look forward to leading the dedicated public servants at ODA to continue to promote Oregon food and agricultural products around the state, the nation, and the globe. If confirmed, one of my top priorities my first year at ODA will be to get to every county in Oregon so I can meet the farmers and ranchers in their communities and see the diversity of Oregon agriculture firsthand. I'm excited about this opportunity and what lies ahead for Oregon agriculture, and appreciate the opportunity to be considered for this very important position. Thank you very much, and I look forward to any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Farioli.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Can you talk a little about your experience with communicating the values of agriculture to an urban population that politically controls agriculture?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, thank you for that question. I think it's ultimately one of the key things that agriculture has not done well and is so important to do. Everybody needs to eat, so everybody has a true vested interest in our food production, how it's produced, and why we use certain technologies or do certain types of practices. But oftentimes, agriculture has allowed others to really dictate our message. And I think I have really worked to talk to a variety of stakeholders, non-traditional stakeholders as well, over my time in Washington, D.C., because our consumers and some of the large, I would say, retail industry are going to be effective in driving new, almost regulatory measures by consumer demand. So I think talking about how food's produced, why we produce it that way to an urban population is really key to agriculture's success, because they are ultimately our consumers.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Additional questions? Yes, Senator Boquist.
Thank you. Since I'm virtually the seed capital of the state, I just give you one piece of advice. We hear, very rarely do we hear complaints about the Department of Agriculture, so ma'am, please don't screw it up.
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, that has been a running theme of all of my meetings over the past week that I have been here. Everyone says ODA runs well. Obviously, my predecessor has left big shoes to fill, and there's a wonderful team of public servants there. And I look forward to being part of that team, and really hope in a year when you're talking to me again in this position, or in a month or 6 months from now, people still say it's a great running organization.
We are open to any export you can do better to.
Senator Burdick, no questions about one of our most lucrative crops?
Senator Farioli and I might have some plans for you. I'll just leave it at that.
It's king and queen of marijuana, if you don't know. Okay?
Well, I look forward to working with all the members on the committee, particularly as I get out to your districts.
Our newest crop.
Not so.
No, it's pretty old. Yeah. It's legal crop.
Well, thank you indeed. Certainly following in Katie Koba's footsteps in this position is a great honor, and
too much.
She's done a great job and will still be around, and you'll be working with her. So that's excellent. I also just wanted to mention that my grandma, since I already talked about my dad, was a farmer from Iowa who moved from Iowa to California and grew oranges in Covina in the days when you could still do that in California. So Iowa farming is just a huge part of the tradition. I'm sure she would not recognize what a farm is like today, but yeah. Thank you again, and we'll let you go and look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
And I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Vernon Pomrose to the Electrical and Elevator Board, and then we'll be hearing from Sam Barrasso. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee, and thanks for waiting so patiently.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators of the Executive Appointments Committee.
Back in Washington, D.C.
A few months back, I noticed that the Electrical and Elevator Board was four positions short. And so with much consideration and thoughtfulness, I thought, why not? So here I am. I currently work for Portland General Electric. I have 20 years in the utility industry and power plants. Another 20 years working in electrical construction for various contractors. I'm a certified electrical safety compliance professional. through the National Fire Protection Association, and also serve on the certified electrical qualifications committee for that certification. I'm a general supervisor. I have a license. And let's see. And I think it's very important to volunteer, especially for something as important as the Electrical and Elevator Board, which supports the Building Codes Division, which is all about safety in construction, not only electrical, but other aspects of construction. And the certifying of contractors and tradespeople, making sure they have the proper education and the knowledge to carry through their mission. And so so the Electrical and Elevator Board also makes sure contractors have the licenses to do the work and kind of police, make sure there are contractors out there that, you know, they get called before the board and get fined if they're not licensed to, and qualified to do the work. Some of the codes I've dealt with this last week, I actually went to Seattle, and the 2017 National Electrical Code is being adopted throughout the nation, and took a two-day class on that. And one of the missions of the Electrical Elevator Board is to look at the work that the Electrical Specialty Code Committee has done. And what they do is they look at the latest adoption of the code and make changes and recommendations that make sense for the state of Oregon for businesses, and make sure there isn't an economic impact that greatly affects different entities. So I served on that board in 2011 and 2014. So I kind of understand what my role is being on that board, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity. And I appreciate you being here to listen to me.
Great. Well, thank you. You sound well qualified and certainly bring a lot to this board. Any questions for Mr. Pomrose? Okay. Thank you very much. We've got a charge out of your testimony, too. I mean, I guess I'm really indulging myself today. I'm sorry.
Let her rip, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Sam Barrasso to the Environmental Quality Commission.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Farioli, Senators. My name is Sam Barrasso, and I'm from Senate District 23 in Portland. I appreciate being able to present myself to you all this afternoon, and I'm incredibly excited by Governor Brown's nominating me to the Environmental, as Commissioner to the Environmental Quality Commission. So I originally moved to Oregon to work on some of the nationally recognized innovative environmental policies that balanced economic well-being, environmental stewardship, and public health. This was work in water quality trading. It was work that saved ratepayers money, benefited private landowners, and supported a healthy environment. In that time, I've had the privilege to work in both rural and urban areas of the state on issues of water quality, air quality, habitat quality, and clean energy. And I look forward to working on the EQC now to advance some of that innovative approaches that balance that economic well-being, public environmental health, social equity. And I believe my background in small business management, finance, and environmental management will be an asset towards serving on the EQC. Again, many thanks for your time this afternoon. And I'd like to, with that, welcome questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Barrasso? I don't see any questions for you, so thank you again.
All right. Thank you very much.
And I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Gabrielle Guiden to the Home Care Commission. And then after we've heard from her, we'll be calling the appointees to the State Hospital Advisory Board. Good afternoon, and thanks for waiting so patiently.
Hi, I'm Gabrielle Guiden. I am nominated for the Home Care Commission, Oregon Home Care Commission. I am a little nervous, but I'm very honored to be nominated for this committee. I myself have a disability. I've known a lot of people with disabilities, as well as my mom. She runs a foster home for kids that have disabilities and has since I was 12. I feel that I would be a great fit because I have the background
of working with other people with disabilities and hearing their stories and seeing their passion and how they live and how they just run their lives, as well as supporting the providers out there, the workers, everything like that. I have the privilege of actually working with those people at Community Vision, who are, I'm a job developer there, but I have worked with all these providers, home care providers. They're very awesome, and I love to support them. I also was just recently appointed as the director of Oregon Self-Advocacy Coalition. And so I, through the process of doing that, I've gotten to know people and seen their lives and seen how they've grown by having these privileges. Not privileges, you know, having these chances. I'm sorry I didn't say Senator Rosenbaum and...
That's okay. Committee. We know who we are. So. At least usually.
I'm just a little nervous, but thank you for listening to this. Sorry.
No, that's great. The Home Care Commission is really important, and obviously the demand for home care services is huge already, and it's going to be bigger because people are getting older and people are in need of those services. So I have ultimate respect for everybody in that field, and I'm glad that you're willing to take on this assignment. So thank you.
Any
questions for Ms. Gadon? Okay, thank you again, and we'll let you go. And I'll close the public hearing, and next we'll open a public hearing on the following appointments to the Oregon State Hospital Advisory Board: William Bloom, Janet Carlson, Andre Pruitt, and James Underwood. I believe all four of you are here, and you probably could pull up another chair. And I see our former colleague and County Commissioner Janet Carlson here, so welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Madam Chair, you realize those chairs are
attached.
Nailed down.
I know. I've tried to move them a few times. Okay, whoever wants to go first, go ahead.
Okay, I'll get started. Yeah, I'm James Underwood. I go by my middle name, Herschel, and I'm here to try and fill the seat on the advisory board that's designated for the person who represents the direct care staff at the hospital. I feel I'm willing to serve in that position. I'm the SEIU 503, Local 392 president at the hospital, and it's a passion of mine to work at the hospital to provide high-quality care, and I feel it's appropriate to have that seat at the table. I've worked in the mental health field for over 30 years. I started as a volunteer. Some of you may have been around in the damaged days, but my first job in mental health was meeting the damaged bus when it came to Portland and taking patients out to look at community facilities. And from there, I just fell in love with the work. I worked at Mount Hood Community Mental Health Center, and that folded into Cascadia, and worked in eviction prevention, assertive community treatment, and many other roles in that job. Currently, I'm working out at the hospital as a collaborative problem-solving coach, working with the staff on the floor to look at a different approach and culture change in how we do business at the hospital. I've also served at the hospital as a mental health specialist, teaching classes in the treatment malls to patients who are court-ordered to the hospital to establish competency restoration. So I'm just happy to be here. I go to work every day trying to contribute to a quality system. I strive to provide services that I would be proud to recommend to a family member should they need it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Madam Chair, Senator Rosenbaum, Vice Chair, Senator Froley, and everybody else on this board. My name is Andre Pruitt. I am a clinical practitioner, born in Portland, Oregon. Been there for several years, and for the last 15 years, been providing mental health throughout the state of Oregon. I'm interested in being a part of this position on this board as a practitioner, providing care. I've worked with patients or clients that were in the state hospital transitioning back into the community. and I'm looking forward to this. So, thank you. I'm trying to be short.
Good move. Thank you.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, I'm Janet Carlson. I serve as a Marion County Commissioner, and I would serve the I will serve the public spot on the Oregon State Hospital Advisory Board, and also one that is supposed to be living in the vicinity of the Oregon State Hospital. When I was a state representative, my house district actually included the Oregon State Hospital. I walked every house in the vicinity, was very connected with the neighborhood association, so I feel like I can do a good job representing the various interests that are of the public around that area. As Marion County Commissioner, also I'm involved with County Mental Health. I serve on the board of the Mid-Valley Behavioral Care Network. I'm currently chair of the Coordinated Care Organization, Willamette Valley Community Health, the chair of that board, and have been involved. I was actually involved in the stakeholders work group that helped create the new state hospital when that was taking shape. So I've had a number of experiences with mental health, and I'm looking forward to this opportunity. Thank you.
Great.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Senators. My name is William Bloom. I'm from King City, Oregon, Washington County. I'm very honored to be here today before you and given the opportunity to do this, asked to do this service work. I am a advisory council member currently on PAMI, the Protection and Advocacy for Individuals with Mental Illness. We advise Disability Rights Oregon. I'm also a person of lived experience. I am educated at University of Nevada, Reno in psychology, and Truckee Meadows Community College in special education. I was trained by the state of Oregon in collaborative problem solving. I first moved to Oregon in 1975. It wasn't on my application, I don't think. I think I forgot to put that. Came back in 2009. I have been a licensed amateur radio operator for 24 years. And I'm also a sky-worn severe weather spotter for the National Weather Service in Portland. And I want to serve on this board to give back to the people who helped me and to serve the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Great. Do we have any questions for these good folks? I don't see any, but thank you very much, because I do remember well when this board was created and the great work that's gone on at the state hospital and continues to be much needed to have community involvement. I especially want to recognize former Representative County Commissioner Janet Carlson, because she and I were in the same freshman class in the legislature, and there are really not very many those people left in the legislature. I think maybe Senator Jackie would be one of the few remaining people from our years. So it's great to see you again. Okay, thank you all. And I will close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Jenna Weinberg to the Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disability. And after we've heard from her, we'll be calling Catherine Reed. Hi, welcome, and thanks for waiting so patiently.
Thank you, Senator Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. My name is Jenna Weinberg. I am the public nominee to the Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disability. I'm from Oregon City, and I am a captain in the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office as the director of Clackamas County Community Corrections. I have previously served two terms on the Psychiatric Security Review Board, where I met the current executive director of the commission, Susan Isaacs. She asked me if I would be interested in joining this commission. And after looking into the responsibilities of the commission, I was very interested. I believe the judiciary is one of high integrity, and I believe that the commission provides a checks and balances for our judiciary and helps ensure that integrity. And I look forward to serving.
Great. And we have any questions for this appointee? I don't see any. So thank you again. Thank you for waiting so patiently. And I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Catherine Reed to the Lane Transit District Board. And after we've heard from her, we'll be calling Christopher Farrell. Hi, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairwoman and Vice Chair and the rest of the committee members. Thank you so much for having me here today. My name is Kate Reed. Catherine is my legal name. And I live in West Eugene, Senate District 4, and I am the governor's appointee for that LTD board seat that will be opening up for Subdistrict 7. I'm very interested in transit. I feel very honored to be here today and to even be considered. My interest ranges on a lot of different levels, first being a Eugene resident and a Springfield worker. I travel about 25 minutes a day on my personal commute one way to work, and I love working in Springfield and living in Eugene, so I've seen a lot of the things that have happened over the past 4 or 5 years on the West 11th Corridor, and also have been in many meetings talking about the main McVeigh Corridor as well. So I'm interested to see what happens there. I'm also interested in, let's see my notes here, the idea of looking at where people live and how they work within that area and what they have access to with how transportation is set up. So that's, you know, looking at equity for me, looking at access to resources, potential job markets for individuals. And the other piece that I'm interested in within the LTD board is seeing a shift in leadership over the past year with the new general manager. I think it's a very interesting time to be a part of what they're doing, and it's exciting for me. So thank you so much for having me.
Great. Thank you for your willingness to serve. Did we have any questions for Ms. Reed? Okay, thank you again.
Thank you.
And I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Christopher Farrell to the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots. And after we've heard from him, we'll be calling Barry Pack. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. I thank you for the opportunity to come and introduce myself. I'm Captain Chris Farrell. I live in Astoria. I'm a shipmaster and Columbia River bar pilot. I grew up on the Columbia River and always interested in the ships going by, and that led me to the California Maritime Academy, where I got a degree in marine transportation. Spent 23 years on ships, where I worked my way up to become a captain and gained a lot of experience in shipboard operations and the business of shipping, which I hope to use towards this appointment on the board. I've now been a Columbia River bar pilot for 5 years. If confirmed, I look forward to serving the state of Oregon, its environment, and the economy of the region by lending my experience. I look forward to the opportunity to do that. And I will work hard to continue the history of safe and efficient pilotage in the, for the state. I thank you for your consideration.
Great. Thank you for your willingness to serve and for doing a really important and dangerous job. Any questions for Captain Farrell?
No, madam. We could use more ships coming up the river, but he can't solve that problem.
Bring them on. We'll bring them in.
Thank you again. And I'll close the public hearing and next open a public hearing on the appointment of Barry Pack as the director of the Oregon State Lottery. Good afternoon. Welcome
Good afternoon.
To the Senate Rules Committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Barry Pack, acting director of the Oregon Lottery. My career in state government has focused on pulling teams together to support change in both strategy and service delivery, and I bring to the lottery the ability to encourage and foster collaboration, innovation, while maintaining accountability. The legislature and Oregonians have spoken, and our mission is clear: maximize profits commensurate with the public good. However, I'll tell you that lottery revenues remain 18% below their peak in 2007 before the smoking ban and the Great Recession. And without thoughtful and responsible innovations in our operations and product offerings, the revenue growth looks relatively flat. As my commission chair constantly reminds me, a business that isn't growing is dying. And a dying business does not meet our constitutional and statutory mission. So if confirmed, I will build a strong team focused on a business plan to reasonably and responsibly grow lottery revenues to the state. We can't just ask our current players to play more or wager higher. That's in conflict with our mission to maximize revenues commensurate with the public good. We must meet new players through a delivery systems that are more relevant and familiar to them. Increasingly, we are selling an offline product in an online world. If the lottery is to continue to grow, we must adapt to new markets and new technology. I have a strong commitment to public service and to see the lottery continue to do good things for Oregon. I bring an inclusive leadership style with the mantra that I have already spread through the organization. To be successful, You have to bring the right people around the table with the right information to make a good decision. I have built and will continue to build strong relationships with our industry partners and the responsible and problem gambling treatment communities, and I have their support. I also thank the staff who've been so supportive during my interim service. They have a great mix of public and private sector experience and provide games that Oregonians enjoy, generating revenue for important state programs while mitigating the harmful impacts of gambling. I would look forward to answering any questions, and I thank you for your consideration.
Great. Thank you for picking on the job that you're already doing and continuing in that important capacity. Any questions for Mr. Pack? Yes, Senator Burdick.
When did the contracts come up again for the bars and taverns?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, in 2020.
In 2020. Thank you.
Okay. So we're supposed to gamble on you, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, I appreciate the odds.
Generally, you and I don't agree, but this time around, we happen to agree. So,
thank you, Senator.
Okay, I don't see any other questions for you, so we'll
thank
let you,
Madam
go.
Madam Chair, members.
Thanks again. And I'll close the public hearing, and I guess we could take our phone person first if they're ready. Okay, next I'll open a public hearing on the appointments to the Oregon Youth Program Advisory Board, starting with Drew Hornbeck, who will be joining us by phone.
Outdoor or Oregon?
Outdoor Youth Program Advisory Board.
That's too bad. I wanted to meet her.
Hi, is this Drew Hornbeck?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Drew. This is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments, and we're here in the Capitol. With me are the Vice Chair of our committee, Senator Ted Ferrioli, as well as Senators Lee Byer, Senator Brian Boquist, Senator Ginny Burdick, and our special guest, Senator Kevin Talbert. And we've just opened a hearing on your appointment to the Outdoor Youth Program Advisory Board. So very briefly, we'd like to hear why you want to serve on this board.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity. I'd just like to take the opportunity to say that I've been involved with Outdoor Youth Program licensing pretty much since the onset of New Vision Wilderness. I was involved in the creation of our own policies and procedures and working with the state. I've worked closely with the state, and I've operated licensed wilderness programs across the country. As the CEO of New Vision Wilderness, I think I'm in a unique position to support our efforts to offer unique and effective alternative therapeutic services for youth. So I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much for your willingness to serve. Do we have any questions for Mr. Hornbeck? Okay. I don't see any questions for you. So we have another appointee to the same board that's here in person. You're welcome to stay on the phone and listen to him if you like, or we can let you go.
Sure. Great. I'd love to hear. Thank you.
Okay. Great. And next, I'll open a public hearing on the appointment of Jonathan Baker to the Oregon Youth Program Advisory Board. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Chair Rosenbaum, Senators, thank you. I've been living in Oregon for about 10 years. I've been working in the outdoor programming industry for about 11 years. I've worked in other states. I work for a program currently called Evoke at Cascades. I live in Bend, Oregon. As far as my history, my experience, I've been a member of an organization called the Outdoor Behavioral Healthcare Council for about 5+ years now. I was the chair of a committee that created a set of accreditation standards, hoping to create a standard that other programs can be held to, a third-party accreditation. My commitment, my passion, my energy is to hold ourselves and other programs in our industry to high standards, and I think my experience so far has demonstrated that commitment. So I welcome any questions. Thank you.
Great. Do we have any questions for Mr. Baker? I don't see any, so thank you very much for your patience and for serving on this important board. And thank you also, Mr. Hornbeck. We'll let you go about your day. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And I'll close the public hearing. And next, I will open a public hearing on the appointment of Raymond Byrd to the Board of Public Safety Standards and Training. And here he is. And we are looking forward to hearing from you.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, Vice Chair Farioli, and Senators. I'm Raymond Bird. I'm from Kaiser, Oregon. I'm the head of security at Salem-Kaiser School District. I come to you with 32 years of law enforcement security experience. I started in the military as a military policeman, where I worked high-level security. Later transferred to Fort Hood, Texas, where I worked law enforcement patrol duties and AWOL apprehension. I came to Oregon in 1990 and worked private security, but then was hired by Kaiser Police Department. I later left Kaiser Police Department after 7.5 years and went to Salem Police Department. During my law enforcement career, I've been a patrol officer, I've been a detective, I've been a school resource officer, I've been the arson investigator for Kaiser. I'm currently in my 16th year at Salem-Kaiser School District as the head of security. Being the head of security encompasses everything, including electronic security, supervise all the security officers, and I perform the security side of threat management. I am completely honored to be in the position where I've been nominated by the governor to be a member of the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training. I'm very proud to be a graduate of BPSST, Class 171, and I look forward to utilizing my experience, my unique perspective in security and law enforcement work and in life to help guide the Academy forward in the future.
Great. Well, thank you very much your willingness to serve. Any questions, members? Okay, I don't see any questions for you. So thank you again for your patience and taking this on.
Thank you.
And I'll close the public hearing. And next person will be joining us by phone. I will open a public hearing on the appointment of Paula Brown to the Oregon Transportation Commission. Hi, is this Paula Brown?
Hi, yes.
Good afternoon. Yes, this is Chair Rosenbaum, and we've just opened a hearing on your appointment to the Oregon Transportation Commission, and you know the other committee members, I believe, so please go ahead and tell us about your background and why you'd like to serve.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the Rules Committee. Thank you for taking the time to allow me to make a brief introduction by phone, and I apologize for being unable to participate in person. I am Paula Brown, and I've been honored to be nominated by the governor, as you know, for the Oregon Transportation Commission. I've been active in the Oregon transportation issues since I moved here in 1993 and worked for the Rogue Valley Council of Governments and then with the city of Ashland through the end of 2008. I've served the military, various small cities, special districts, all during my 35-year career. My background as an engineer allows me to develop and thoroughly evaluate alternatives to be able to recommend the best choices for a given set of circumstances. There are always competing priorities, especially within a constrained budget, and if confirmed as a member of the Oregon Transportation Commission, I look forward to helping the citizens of Oregon as we all look for the best opportunities to enhance and protect our transportation system within finite resources. And I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Great. Well, this is a very important commission, and we're glad you're willing to serve. Do we have any questions for Ms. Paula Brown?
I'm going to let the chair go first, then I'll go. Or leave it pass.
Fine.
He's fine. Ms. Brown, this is Senator Boquist.
Hi, Senator. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. My colleague across down from me, which I won't mention who he is, calls me Senator Sunshine, so I have the list of questions. I think, as you mentioned, you have some fairly extensive experience in engineering and in leadership. I just want to remind you of a couple of things that we witnessed. I am the co-vice chair of the Joint Transportation Committee, and I think you're fully aware of what SECNAV and OPNAV instructions are, Navy law, basically. And I want to remind you of the Oregon Revised Statute, if you'd indulge me.
Great, thank you.
The top two things and responsibilities of the Oregon Transportation Commission, number one is general supervision and control and establishment, construction, improvement, and maintenance of all state highways. So basically, the Transportation Commission does have the responsibility and the authority and the responsibility, again, to ensure the maintenance and the operation of state highways. There seems to be, or was at least displayed at my last meeting of the Oregon Transportation Commission, some confusion on that matter. So I wanted to make sure you
fully grasp that you're back in uniform.
I haven't been out very long, so that'll be an easy transition. Thank you.
And the second thing that came up that was very intriguing is that the Oregon Transportation Commission is responsible for developing a state transportation policy, and I say, quote, a comprehensive long-range plan for the state. I actually asked for that plan very recently, and I think you know what deer in the headlight look is. There was quite a discussion. Mr. O'Halloran, who will be speaking before the Joint Committee tomorrow, very quickly grasped that the Commission does have the responsibility to develop a long-term comprehensive plan. That plan will be instrumental on for several of us being able to put together a transportation package. So you're going to go to a board whose number two task or commission was to develop a long-range comprehensive plan, and they don't have one yet. So you're going to have to roll up your sleeves, at least with Mr. O'Halloran and several others, to develop that plan so we in the legislature have some guidance of whether we need 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, or 20 years to fix the challenges we have.
Senator, the challenge for me is developing that plan, and if that's something that you have not seen, that's something that definitely needs to be developed thoroughly and look at all of the intermodal connections and connectivity to the entire transportation system, not just highways, but probably everything else too.
Well, I appreciate that, and just to let you know, we leave here in July, so if we're going to do a package, we have to have that planned long time before July. So I am voting for you, but anticipating you and Mr. O'Halloran to get on the stick and get it done.
Thank you very much.
Okay, additional questions? I see no more questions for you, Ms. Brown, so thank you very much for taking on a challenging and very important assignment, and we will be acting on your appointment at the close of today's hearing.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you allowing me to do this by phone, and happy holidays to all of you.
No problem. Thank happy you. Holidays to you, too.
Thank you.
And I'll close the public hearing and open a public hearing on the appointment of Linda Simmons to the TriMet Board. And then after we've heard from her, we will be calling Bernice Jones Centeno, and she will be our last appointee for today. Hi. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Hi. And thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and Vice Chair Feroli and Senators Beyer, Boquist, and I guess Senator Burdick is absent right now. But my name is Linda Simmons, and I live in Tualatin, Oregon. I retired in December 2011 following 39 years of employment in administrative and executive roles in two-year public community colleges, primarily in Oregon. However, I've also worked in California and in Ohio. I learned of the vacant TriMet board position when Tualatin Mayor Lou Ogden contacted me about the possibility of applying. I at that point reached out to TriMet senior staff and the general manager to learn about the board role and to see if my experience and skills would be relevant. Subsequently, I submitted an application to Governor Brown. My interest in serving in the TriMet board stems from, first of all, seeking a way to give back to my community, and also having the available time and relevant expertise to contribute. I have prior board experience and understand the role of a board member in providing strategic direction, challenging management, and acting on the interests of the institution and on behalf of the fiduciary responsibility to the taxpayers. I've worked with community college students and understand the transportation challenges they face and can advocate on behalf of those who require and use public transit. I have experience in leading a successful capital construction bond campaign, as well as managing several major capital projects. I happen to understand that TriMet will be undertaking significant new capital investments over the coming years as a result of a demand, population, and congestion growth. And my prior experience, I believe, would be useful to them. My background enables me to help ensure that the investments are smart, financially prudent, and carried out efficiently and effectively. Finally, I have extensive experience working with represented workforces and have negotiated multiple collective bargaining agreements. Therefore, I understand it's a balance between needs and interests. That workers need to be fairly compensated, and it has always been my goal to reach a negotiated settlement that meets the needs of all parties. I appreciate the opportunity to be considered for this very important role.
Okay, well, thank you for being willing to take it on. Do we have any questions for Ms. Simmons? Okay, Senator Farioli.
Can you talk about the unfunded liability for retirements at TriMet?
You know, I'm not versed on that at this particular time.
Well, Madam Chair, just take a couple of aspirin and Google it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments or questions? I don't see any, so thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Byer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I was intrigued recently by the director's comments in his newsletter to, I don't know who it goes to, I happen to get it, that a third of all commuters in the metro area commute on the MAX lines. That's true. I know my commute, when I make it from my home 100 miles away to Portland, has gone from, I commented last week in a group, from about an hour and 45 minutes to 2.5 hours now. Mm-hmm. And most of that's from Aurora in to Portland. Mm-hmm. Your three counties in 2015 alone grew by over 27,000 people in 1 year. You have a big problem.
Mm-hmm. And it's continuing to grow. Right.
$1 billion. Okay, I don't see any other questions, so we'll thank you again.
Thank you.
And I'll close the public hearing. And last but not least, I'll open a public hearing on the appointment of Bernice Jones Centeno to the Trust for Cultural Development Board. And thank you very much for waiting so patiently and listening to all these fascinating stories from all these great people.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and Senators. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you today. Just a little bit about my background. I am a classically trained musician, and I also happen to be a musicologist who's studying at the University of Oregon at the same time. And I am the interim director for the Astoria Music Festival, the managing director. And what that basically says about my background is that I have a combination of the performance side as well as the administrator side. And what I've come to know is that there is something of a gap between access for the artist as well as access for the audience. And what's been fantastic is that the Cultural Trust has been really strong in bridging that gap, making themselves absolutely more available to the community as well as to the artists. They've done a great job of making their work known to people and what they do. And what I would like to do is assist in bringing the artist's voice to the picture, having the artist be known to the work of the trust, as well as they understand their responsibility to make sure that the community is made aware of the work of the trust as well as making sure that the community understands how the trust and artists work together. I feel as if my own contribution coming from Astoria, that location up there, there's a great deal of art, but the trust needs to have a little bit more representation in that location, and I believe I can help with that as well. So,
great. So did we have any questions for Ms. Jones-Centeno? No. And, well, thank you again. And this really is, I mean, just because we put it last doesn't mean we don't think that it's important. This is extremely important, and having you be from Astoria is great.
Thank
Senator
you.
Johnson, I believe, is a legislative member, probably will continue to be, and so will be a great partner for
yeah,
you.
She's been very, very instrumental in keeping the arts up there as well.
Okay. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
And I will close the public hearing, and I think we would like Senator Burdick to rejoin us.
Take a recess. Let's pause for a second.
So...
We need to
Yeah, and I think she's coming. I'm perfect timing. We were just talking about you. Okay, so that completes our public hearings, and we are very impressed with everybody, including all the people that left. And so now we're going to start with our motions. So I will open a work session for the purpose of considering the governor's appointments. And I will start by opening a work session and moving the appointment of James Biddle to the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to the Senate floor with the recommendation that he be confirmed. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Madam Chair, I think that my colleague and I are going to split our votes on this. I'm going to be sending a message. It has nothing to do with Mr. Biddle's qualification, but poor vetting and imbalance on the board.
So. Okay, thank you for your comments, Senator Farioli. Is there any further discussion on the motion?
Oh, we might as well just assume now, man, so we can stay going. I'm going to support Mr. Biddle's nomination to the board. I think it's no surprise to, I guess, all of us here, because we've all been, I guess I'm the junior person, I've only been here 8 years, right? The fact of the matter is this commission, and unfortunately one of the other ones that we have, we are continually trying to figure out what the qualifications are. Everybody seems to agree what the qualifications are. Nobody seems to be able to define what the qualifications are. I have taken it upon myself to look at this one and invite various stakeholders in so that during the next legislative session we have an opportunity to discuss those qualifications, make minor tweaks to try and get that definition so that at least the five members are here right now, and of course you'll be gone, don't receive 3,000 emails every time one of these two come up because somebody said this and somebody said that. So I am going to support Mr. Biddle because we need to fill the vacancy, but I am going to be opposing some the other two, not because of individuals, but simply because we need to revise this statute and get everybody on the same sheet of music. I've informed the governor's office of that. They're willing to listen to proposals from industry and everything else as we work our way through trying to get this off of our plate for the next 12 years instead of being on our plate for the last 12 years. So I will be supporting this motion, but taking on the challenge of rewording these 10 or 12 words so that we can get a better definition.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. Senator Boquist, Senator Beyer.
Madam Chair, I'm going to support the governor's appointment of Mr. Biddle. It would have been nice if she could have found somebody who was both a rancher and a fisherman.
My point exactly, Senator.
But she didn't. I think he's well qualified for the job. I am concerned. I thought when we had this discussion last time, there was a tacit agreement. We all talked about getting a rancher involved, and we didn't. And I feel bad about that.
Okay, yeah. Yes. Oh. Second comment.
The statute talks about not less than three landowners, but somebody needs to understand that not less than three does not mean zero.
Okay. Any additional comments? Seeing none. Samantha, would you please call the roll?
Senator Beyer?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perry?
No.
Aye. And the motion carries. And you do need a volunteer to carry this on the floor. We can always change that carrier later. So,
okay, you want me to do this?
That'd be
fine. I'll do this one since I'm going to vote no.
Okay.
We're going to have to divide this up because there's one. I think there's five motions.
Okay, so Senator Boquist will carry this one on the floor. And I will close the work session and open a work session and move the reappointment of Gregory Woldy to the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to the Senate floor with the recommendation that he be confirmed. Is there discussion? I know some has already taken place. Is there additional discussion? Okay, seeing none. Samantha, please call the roll.
Senator Beyer?
Yes.
Senator Boquist?
No.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perry-Oldy?
No.
Chair Rosenbaum? Aye. Motion carries. And probably would make sense for the same person to carry this and the next appointment. Do we have a volunteer? Senator?
I'm doing forestry.
Uh-huh.
I'll do it.
Senator Talbert? Senator Byer. Okay, great.
You get to carry.
Okay. So Senator Byer will carry, and I'll close the work session, and I'll open a work session on the reappointment of Laura Anderson to the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to the Senate floor with the recommendation that she be confirmed. Any discussion?
Madam Chair,
Senator Farioli.
Same discussion. I think the guidelines for appointment is that there would be less than three landowners. Less than three does not mean zero. So I will go.
Hey, thank you. Further discussion?
Just Madam Chair, just to reiterate, I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with Ms. Anderson or Mr. Woolley.
Exactly.
The issue is we're reappointing people when we were arguing over the definition of who should be reappointed and the types of people. This is something we should be probably resolved between now and a multiple one was asked the governor just to roll them over. Let's figure out the definition and do this in February. So again, absolutely nothing against the individuals. They're perfectly qualified. It's just how is this mix supposed to be?
Okay. Seeing no further comments, yeah. Samantha, would you please call the roll?
Senator Byer?
Yes.
No.
Senator Burdick?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Farioli? No. Aye. Motion carries. Senator Byer, would you be willing to carry this on the floor? Okay, and Senator Byer will be our carrier. So, forestry. And I'll close that work session, and next I'll open a work session and move the reappointment of Thomas Imeson to the State Board of Forestry to the Senate floor with the recommendation that he be confirmed. Is there any discussion? Yes, Senator Boquist.
Yes, ma'am. This is our second problem child. This is the Board of Forestry. Once again, we have interpretation differences. I actually did meet with the previous candidate, Evan Smith, who is with, I guess, the Conservation Fund. They have 240,000 acres they manage, so on and so forth. It's ironic that many in the industry say this guy ought to replace somebody else that's on the board back and forth. But once again, it comes down to nothing against any of the individuals. It comes down to, you know, how do you define the qualifications, paragraph 4? We've argued about this for the 8 years I've been in this building. I've asked the governor's staff and everybody else to come together and let's figure out what is the right definition. It just, in my mind, doesn't make sense to reappoint two people when we're going to go back and argue about this definition. And I remind you, we are leaving one vacancy empty on that board right now, and it's going to turn into another food fight between now and February. So I will be a no vote, but I think the individuals that are actually on there are perfectly qualified.
Okay, any additional discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Farioli.
Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Oregon Department of Forestry, and the ability of the Oregon Department of Agriculture's new director to do her job depends on the trust of landowners and the goodwill of the folks that actually have the ownership and the management authority that converts into voluntary programs for conservation of fish and wildlife, of access for management, access for recreation. If these landowners feel they're not being represented and that the decisions that affect their livelihoods are being made by people who have no direct connection with their industry, you jeopardize all of the cooperative agreements and all of the credibility of the agencies themselves, and that will impinge on our ability to continue to have what has been a model for cooperation in natural resource management and conservation. You break that connection, people feel underrepresented, that injustice will not rest. So that's the problem that we're having here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Samantha, would you please call the roll?
Senator Byer?
Yes.
Senator Boquist?
Nope.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Farioli?
No.
Chair Rosenbaum?
Aye. Motion carries. And Senator Burdick, would you carry this one? Okay, thank you. I'll close the work session and open a work session and move the reappointment of Michael Rose to the State Board of Forestry to the Senate floor with the recommendation that he be confirmed. Is there discussion?
Same on the record. Let's move on.
Okay.
Ditto, Madam Chair.
No further discussion. Samantha, would you please call the roll?
Senator Byer?
Yes.
Senator
Boquist? No.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
No.
Chair
Rosenbaum? Aye. Motion carries. Senator Burdick, would you carry? thank you, and I will close that work session. And now, without further ado...
Now you're going to do an en banc.
So,
have we gotten there yet?
Well, I've still got everybody here. Before I make this motion, because this is my last hearing, though not the last you'll hear from me, because I get to probably carry this, I'm going to volunteer. I did want to just say to all of you committee members that it has been a great pleasure and honor to chair this committee for the past 6 years. Certainly Senator Devlin before me was an excellent and diplomatic and very careful chair. Others who have had the honor of chairing this committee before me and will have it in the future, I'm sure would agree with me that really seeing all of these incredible Oregonians come forward who are willing to help us steer the ship of state is really humbling and one of the best experiences you can have in the legislature. I also want to just applaud, as I have many times, our capable committee administrator, Aaron Seiler, who keeps us on time, on pronunciation, probably knows more than just about any person in the state of Oregon about the components of these boards and commissions and agency directors. She does a fabulous job. So thank you, Aaron. Thank you to our committee assistants. And also, I hope they're listening somewhere, thank you to the governor's office executive appointments people, Mary Moeller, currently Kendall Klassen before her, because that is also a really important job in state government of recruiting these great people, finding them, convincing them that it's worth it to put their busy lives on hold and to serve. So it's been an honor to be your chair, and though I won't have another opportunity to hold the gavel, I have really treasured this experience. So thank you all. And
Madam Chair,
yes,
if I can amend your comments here, I think you've just done a tremendous job of cat herding for this committee. We're all trying to get us in for the votes and trying to get us here on time and just running a very professional committee and really being considerate of the people who are coming forward, the nervous people, the people on the phone, just making them feel at home. And I really appreciated that.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, so I will open a work session and move the following appointments and reappointments to the following boards and commissions to the Senate floor with the recommendation that they be confirmed en bloc. John Conser to the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board, Susan Cox to the Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs, Sharon Zinger to the Commission for the Blind, Timothy Callahan, Gina Valerie Colas, Carolyn Cruz, Robin Donert, Christine Hartman, Luvia Morello, Emily Ryman, Carl Reek, Caitlin Robertson, Nicole Stapp, and William Wagner to the Governor's Child Foster Care Advisory Commission, Dylan Boxler to the Construction Contractors Board, Alexis Taylor to the Director of the Department of Agriculture, Vernon Pomrose to the Electrical and Elevator Board, Sam Barrasso and Colleen Johnson to the Environmental Quality Commission, Kevin Cassidy, Therese Gerlitz, John Hartsuck, Dwayne Johnson, Kent Klevitz, John Mishra, and Cynthia Richardson to the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board, Leda Garside to the Health Evidence Review Commission, Gabrielle Godden to the Home Care Commission, William Bloom, Janet Carlson, Andre Pruitt, and James Underwood to the Oregon State Hospital Advisory Board, Carl Miller to the Oregon Investment Council, Jenna Weinberg to the Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disability, Catherine Reed and Carl Yeh to the Lane Transit District Board, Maureen Bedell to the Oregon State Lottery Commission, Christopher Farrell to the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots, Kelly Rothenberger to the State Board of Massage Therapists, Serpa Duos and Jane Woodard to the State Mortuary and Cemetery Board, Arian Moore II to the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board, Amy Tykeson to the Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors, Barry Pack as the Oregon State Lottery Director, Jonathan Baker, Drew Hornback, Maria Tai Mai, and James Yanni to the Outdoor Youth Program Advisory Board, Tom Ceruta to the Board of Commissioners of the Port of Portland, Raymond Bird to the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training, Julie Smith to the Quality Education Board, Scott Youngblood to the Oregon Tourism Commission, Paula Brown to the Oregon Transportation Commission, Linda Simmons to the TriMet Board, Bernice Jones Centeno to the Trust for Cultural Development Board, and Cornelia Paris Gavis to the Board of Trustees of Western Oregon University. Is there any discussion on the en bloc motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, seeing none, it is so ordered, and I will volunteer to carry this motion on the floor and close the work session. And members, with nothing further to come before us today, we are adjourned. Thank you very much. Adjourned. Thank you very much. Today, we are